If we are in the depleting emotion, anger, fear, etc., you're putting out adrenaline and cortisol. But at the same time, you could say, if I change it to gratitude and a regenerative feeling that I appreciate somebody while I'm doing my heart-focused breathing, you can release DHEA, the vitality hormone, feel younger, and oxytocin, which is the love hormone, right?
Cue music. Places, everybody, places. We're starting in 3, 2.
Welcome to the Autoimmune Hour, where we look at the rise of autoimmune disorders. I've brought together top experts that range from doctors, specialists, nutritionists, researchers, and even those recovering from autoimmune to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information about autoimmunity and how to live your life uninterrupted.
Thank you for joining us here on the Autoimmune Hour with Sharon Saylor. Always seek sound legal, medical, and or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune and Life Interrupted Radio. Join the Autoimmune Hour's Courage Club. Sign up now at understandingautoimmune.com. Now, back to your host, Sharon Saylor.
Welcome, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com and from UnderstandingAutoimmune.com, where you can find over 425-plus episodes of this show, as well as listening to this awesome one that we have for you right now. I'm really excited about this one. Plus, I have to give a big shout-out to my guest, because she's actually calling in from Australia, where we're pre-recording, and at 6 a.m. there on the following day. Thank her so much for getting up early to do this special informational interview that we're going to do. I'm really excited about it because we don't talk enough about it. And I think it's on the rise during the pandemic. After we've come out of the pandemic, I'm hearing much more about it. So let me give you a brief introduction to who I'm speaking about. Her name is Ruth Littler, and she is the author of the brand new and award-winning book called Live from the Inside Out. And it just talks about the importance of advocating for yourself while you reclaim your health. And I just think that's so important. The one thing I've learned in my recovery process is no one's going to advocate for you like you. And so we've got an expert here who's going to talk about how she advocated for herself. She experienced burnout, and that led to over 10 years of being chronically ill and tired and sick. And then she threw herself into researching epigenetics, new biology, nutrition. Let me take a look at the whole list that she studied. Resilience, stress transformation, and biblical scriptures. And then she applied them directly to her life. And I just found that so fascinating, because I, too, am one of those people that when I got the diagnosis, it was like, yeah, not going to take me. Let me research it. Dove right in. In 2021, she founded 360 Wellness, a coaching consulting service focusing on resilience, stress, transformation, and reclaiming your health. So welcome, Ruth. Thanks for being on the show.
Oh, thank you very much, Sharon. I really am honored to be here.
I'm thrilled to have you here, and thank you so much for getting up early. Now, I'm curious. I always find, and I'm fascinated by people who, once they get an understanding of what's going wrong in their world, like their health or other things, they just don't sit back and take it. They are saying, I'm going to show life and I'm going to change it around. First, describe what led you up to realizing you were burned out. And then let's talk about some of the things that you did to recover.
Firstly, I didn't even think it was burnout. Even though I'm a counselor, it's very hard to actually admit that I wasn't meeting my deadlines, or if I was, yeah, I did meet my deadline, but it was always at working longer hours, working at nighttime, morning. It wasn't easy. So I just kept looking at it as it's job. It's a job I hate. I should get out rather than something's happening. And I did get out of the job, but I took it with me, all these things that were happening to me. And one of the things that I didn't realize was even an illness, but I was actually losing hair. I just thought, oh, it's just something that happens if you get tired and exhausted. Maybe I had anemia, maybe I had some other illness, but I never actually tried to find out. But what I did find out is I had very high sugar levels during that time. I did go to see the doctor, and I did not want to admit that I had diabetes or anything like that. I was really, I don't want to know all those things. And yet I have, I'm a registered nurse as well. But for myself, I found that very hard to take. And I'm being honest, that's how it was. And basically, I just did everything the doctor told me. I am always evidence-based in my work. So I just did the things that I teach patients, as well as what is in the medical treatments that are evidence-based. And then I realized it was just like one of those revolving doors. I kept going to the doctor and he or she would say things like, if it doesn't get better, come back. So guess what? I just went back. I never thought about that I could do something different, honestly. But that's when you're so tired, it's very hard to think of something new. And that's when I started looking up fatigue. I didn't look up burnout. I actually looked up fatigue. Why am I so tired all the time? Why am I not focused? Why is it so foggy in my mind? And that's when I found HeartMath. And there were lots of techniques there. So I went and studied it. Although I studied it, I realized I still didn't get down to the cause of what was going on. And I was so, honestly, so tired. He had so much money with investigations, with the treatments. And one day I also had skin disorders, and I went to the dermatologist and said, what do you think is the cause? And the dermatologist turned his back to the computer and then just printed off stuff which said how to manage stress. And I just felt so powerless. And I also felt really silly because I teach stuff like this. This is what I do. And to be given that, again, maybe that was pride. But I found that really hard to take. I went to the car, sat there with my invoice, which was quite a bit of money, paying for the bill. And then I thought, I don't want to feel like this. I felt so powerless. I burst into tears. And I said, no, I'm going to take my power back. And that's when I went more and more into learning about burnout. And then I realized the chronic illness all started with stress. Yes, there are some family history things, but it was really a high stress time. And that just wasn't about the job. I learned that there was other things going on, and that's how I decided I would start looking into. And as you mentioned, all the studies I did, it wasn't overnight. But one of the other things that also made me take up was I just kept striving. I had to be perfect. I had to do everything right. And then also another thing as part of my spiritual background is that we have to do everything right and keep striving and be perfect, because I learned that I didn't really want, that's what God wanted. So I had to do that. And I realized that was what was causing me to burn out, all that striving. And then I started studying more about, when did this come about where I was trying to please God all the time doing stuff like this? And all those things put it together. And I thought, I'm now making a big effort to get my health back and get my power back.
Bravo. Bravo. And you certainly have, which I love it, these survivor to thriver stories. And a couple of things came to mind here. I hear it quite often, and I'm seeing some commonalities in the stories that I hear, that it's fascinating to me the number of people who say that from the chronic illness, when you research it back, was a very focused, striving, stressful life and not taking time for themselves or reflecting on their own conditions. I'm finding that such a common thread in a lot of people that come down with autoimmune conditions. It's fascinating to me. One thing I'd like to clarify for people, could you tell them what HeartMath is?
HeartMath is an institute, but it's also done nearly all the 30 years of research. It's a science base. They have a lot of research being done on resilience and stress transformation. Basically, it comes back to the power of the heart. Most times, especially from my nursing background, I learned that the brain controlled everything. And so if I made a decision that I'm going to do something, I'll do it. However, I wasn't able to change a lot of my physiology. And I think that's what HeartMath programs, techniques, et cetera, is actually to stop the stress response, become so aware of how your body works. Yes, there's an autonomic nervous system. It automatically starts out, whether you get adrenaline flowing to be able to deal with something, or whether it's parasympathetic nervous system, which is to slow things down and recover. However, I didn't know that I could actually influence it by my, not only by my thoughts, but by my feeling. And I think that is the difference, is learning that I could actually, in the moment of stress, be able to do something different, to pause, to maybe make a decision, a better decision, to change the way I would respond, was one of the biggest things, instead of just flying off the handle. But one of the things I learned is that we actually accumulate, just like we accumulate stress in our bodies, we also accumulate resilience. And one of the things that HeartMath actually does is increase resilience, personal resilience, and also community resilience. And they actually, all their techniques, all their science research shows that we work on aligning your heart, your mind, your emotions. You actually produce a coherent state. Coherence just means you're in alignment. And even with your hormones, everything just flows and harmonious. To me, it's like the Olympic team in a rowboat, in the rowing competition. They all have to hit the water at the right time to move fast. And it really is optimal performance, but also it's a harmonious flow. And coherence is just everything about HeartMath, is to bring us into a micro recovery. And if I just might say, one of the things that really I found astonishing that is that the whole Netherlands police force use it. Even before, like in a handover time, before going out to do that very hard and dangerous work. And I know a lot of other police officers around the world do it, and health professionals. And it's basically just saying, look, I can't keep going on all the time with the adrenaline flowing all the time. And one of the biggest things I learned is that when we are coherent, that means everything is in alignment, our heart rhythms are actually flowing. And that's what looked like an earthquake graph. Because when you're feeling like you've got to rush and do things, and of course, yeah, you're going to resuscitate people, or especially in a busy emergency center, or you never know, a police officer might be called out for a violent situation, or something nice and quiet happens, and all of a sudden there's violence. At the end of that setting, we actually learn how to calm down. Not to say I'm calm, but actually get your heart rhythms. That's what happens, is our emotions especially influence our heart rhythms. And HeartMath also is something that we learn. There's a lot of electronic equipment for monitoring to actually in real time to show recovery of everything, and you're getting into alignment. But one of the things I learned is that beat to beat, when you take a heart rate, you don't actually know there's a difference between a beat-to-beat heart rate. And that is actually seen by HeartMath equipment or the professionals using it. And they can actually work out who's a predictor of chronic illness early, very early. Because on a graph, it would be like a heart rate variable would be very low. That means the emotional response is not flexible. Like when kids are playing and suddenly they start fighting. And I know as mom, you want to intervene, and then find I didn't have to intervene. They sorted it out themselves. We've gone back to playing together again. And that's the flexibility they have. But as I age, I found that my flexibility was not as efficient, I should say. And that's one of the things HeartMath does, is to actually help us become more emotionally flexible. I know it's an institute, but it's a whole philosophy, a whole science, and a lot of people are using, from Olympic athletes, as I said, to first responders, and also used for people with post-traumatic stress disorder as well, especially with veterans.
Wow. I've heard about it, and I'm looking forward to learning more about it. That's fascinating. And I wanted to point out, when we talked about the vagal nerve response and the parasympathetic nervous system, that for people may not be familiar with that, you can also consider that the fight, flight, or freeze response is in there too. So it's just something to think about, that imagine that you're having low-level flight or freeze all the time, and how valuable it would be to learn to switch that off.
That's right. And I think one of the things, the best thing, not just for me, but even for other people who learn some of the techniques and things, it's really one of the best ways to actually reduce that stress, which is actually making, for me, making my inflammation worse. So every time I felt stress, I really felt like I was burning also. But one of the things I learned is that we can actually put the brakes on the stress response. But first, we've got to know what is actually happening in our bodies. So just being aware of what we're feeling, whether our skin is getting clammy or whether the color's changing, whether our shoulders are hunched, our hands are clenched, our teeth are clenched. What are the signs of stress for ourselves? So we're aware. A lot of people are not aware. The biggest thing is, first of all, is to identify what's happening in your body, being aware that stress, preparing for that stress response. If I know that I'm going to an appointment today or a scan today and I'm scared of what they're going to find or anything like that, you can actually say, I'm going to prepare. I know that it's a stressful situation. So I might do a technique called a hard focus breathing just to actually start putting the brakes on that parasympathetic system. All you're doing is a little bit of micro recovery. And of course, then the other thing is to be aware that we have a physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual domain. Like for me, I see my image of energy tanks. When my energy gets low, is I actually have an image of four tanks. I know we're integrated, but that's how I see it. Is that like we have four domains, and we have to ask ourselves, how full are our tanks? Not just one tank, but there's four tanks. And really, some of the stories of people who thrived after really, really huge tragedy and things like that, they call that other areas of themselves, not just physical, when their bodies were like so low, so fatigued, they just didn't have so much in pain, they call that spiritual resources, the tank, or they call at the mental tank. But somehow or the other, they make the decision, I'm going to open that door to get in, for them to come in. And they do it. And then they collapse afterwards. Do you know what I mean? So you really, this is all about resilience. It's not only knowing what your energy levels are, but which area drains the most. And it's usually the emotional tanks that are drained. And the thing is, sometimes we don't even know we are leaking energy.
It's fascinating to me because I think oftentimes we create our own normals. And so we're not aware that's really not being beneficial at that time. We do it. We choose a pattern of being. And there was some comments here about not even recognizing or realizing it. But sometimes when I do a habit for so long, I don't even realize it's a habit anymore. It just is on autopilot. Sometimes when but say, I've always done it this way, that doesn't mean it's the good way or a productive way. So being aware of those things that we're doing on autopilot seems like it's a really good place to start to figure out how we can refill our four tanks.
That's right. I also, for myself, when I didn't do anything for myself, but I accepted normal, that stress level, extra emotional demands at work, physical demands, everyone else were doing that. So I just saw that's my job. I couldn't see that there was any correlation. Even people who are burning out will say, I haven't got time to work out what to do about my stress. It's something that become an old in society.
Which is unfortunate because one of the other things I found, and I can relate to myself as well, in talking to other thrivers, is that when we don't take care of ourselves early, often you end up with some sort of physical manifestation, an illness or something else, or maybe even mental, emotional manifestation as well. And so it's such a self-defeating statement to say, I don't have time. Goodness sakes, when the body burns out, you'll have a lot of time because there were so many things that you won't be able to physically do. So it seems very self-defeating to say, I'll deal with it later, or I don't have time.
That's right. And it's also like we talk about the expectations you have of yourself. That was a big energy drainer for me.
I had a mentor say to me, and at first I did, sometimes when people drop in lines to you, things that you need to hear, you don't quite always understand them in the moment. Maybe you just have to sit with it and what they mean by that. And he said to me, and it was really poignant, at the time I heard it, it went, I don't get it. But he said, Sharon, sometimes you just need to learn to make your expectations preferences. And I thought, I didn't quite get what he meant by that. But as I've gone through that, and that was probably 20 years ago, and I think about it, I still think about it, because now when things go in a way that I'm not happy about, and I might be getting an emotional response because I want it different, I'll say to myself, I would prefer that it plays out this way, even though I expect it's probably going to play out that way. But I'm just going to let it go. If what I prefer to happen doesn't happen, I'll be okay. And I think that's what he was trying to say to me all those years ago, is you got to let go of so many of these expectations on things. It was about learning to know myself that I'll be okay, instead of projecting out into the future too far and stressing myself out or ruminating about something that happened in the past. It was more about just learning to roll with what was happening. And yes, it's okay to have preferences. I would prefer it to be that way, but it doesn't mean that you're not going to be okay if it doesn't turn out that way.
Once you show what's actually happening to the body, showing what sort of feelings, becoming more self-aware, really self-awareness. But it's also, I have to say that sometimes if you've been, not you, anybody, I think myself included, I wasn't really aware that I hadn't, like, years of resentment, elevated emotions like compassion and care and appreciation, courage, gratitude, kindness. They actually repair DNA when we use the techniques, can actually start repairing DNA. Now, the emotions such as like anger and fear, guilt, shame, resentment, bitterness actually destroys our health. And I learned this through HeartMath, but I didn't know that these feelings were inside me. I wasn't aware. I was aware when I got angry, but that's only when it really, something really was awful that I was angry at. But most times I actually, some of it was subconsciously suppressed, and something I just didn't even know. It wasn't expressed and I didn't even know. For instance, I'll give an example where I didn't realize that I was angry inside. It's like a slow burn. It's not a pleasant feeling. But yet at the same time, I wasn't aware that was anger. And one of the things that I was reading actually was that sometimes you have scowls, your face scowls when you're saying things or to people or something. And I didn't realize that sometimes I would be cynical. I would say, oh yeah, that's, you don't know her. I didn't realize I was actually, this wasn't a gossip thing, but I was actually saying to the person, that person's not, I was angry at that person, but I actually, when they were saying how nice that person helps, and I would say, you don't know her. And I didn't realize that was inside me an anger. And I didn't realize how many years of bitterness that I had. So it was like, quickly tell you, my husband was actually digging a pond for me because we wanted to have a pond in the garden. And then he came and said, come and have a look. And I looked inside. The root was, I'm not kidding, it was really wide root going right down. And I looked inside and I said, oh, that must be the root of bitterness. You know, I didn't realize what I said, really. You know what I mean? That was obviously unconsciously bringing things up. And my body was actually getting a great message there. And then after that was like, example after example came up of what I was holding back. Then you start saying bitter words to people as well. When I say people, are people that I know very closely. Oh, that was awful. And that was probably starting to unravel a lot of that accumulated emotion. And I know I've been reading a lot about shame. And one of the evidence is showing that a lot of our illnesses, and sometimes even the cancer associations are saying that there is a link between some of the cancers, even diabetes and heart problems, with shame that we've accumulated, sometimes put onto us, sometimes we feel that way. And other times I think it comes down to generation, but also guilt. Guilt eats us up. Some of the techniques we use, or even thinking differently, like you said about the preferences, it doesn't matter if that this is what I prefer, but it doesn't matter if it doesn't work out, or I can manage, or I'll find another way. Even a thought like that would start changing the biochemistry, the physiology of the body. You're repairing your brain with a change of thinking. And I found that I got the emotion, but with the thinking change, and I've been reading this from cellular biologists like Bruce Lipton and even neuroeducator Dr. Joe Dispenza, is that when the cells actually have light, and when we start having dark thoughts, the lights go out in ourselves. Even the expression of genes, we actually stop expressing that optimum function of the gene. It's not genetic. It's what's our thinking that actually does that. And then eventually the cells in your body, they all vibrate. And even our thinking that is very self-critical, it actually starts making your organs not vibrate as in the optimum way it should. And then the other part of that is with emotions. When we're feeling anger, and, you know, there's a pathway immediately, the sympathetic nervous system comes on and your adrenaline goes through and your cortisol. What I didn't realize, I learned from the research, is that cortisol circulates for 12 hours. So if you're angry or fearful, and especially it accumulates the demands on us all the time, where we've got adrenaline flowing all the time, the emotion is, I've got to do it. What would happen if I can't meet it? And you start feeling ashamed and things like that. But really, those sort of emotions, and especially the fear and the anger, really kick in the cortisol and adrenaline. And if it's aging, you end up with aches and pains, and joints are stiff, and joints don't move very well. All kind of these chemicals. And what I've found is that when you start looking at emotions that are going on, it's identify what they are. Very difficult if you've never learned that. It was difficult for me, I should say. And one of the things is to know what exactly is happening. But if it's taking too long, it's better to go into the elevated emotions while you're working out all the other things that you've got to change. Go straight into changing it within 60 seconds. That's one of the techniques that I call the quick coherence technique. But even something like a heart-focused breathing, which is imagining you're breathing through the center of your chest, center of your heart, and breathing slowly, more slower and deeper than usual. You can do that while you're driving a car, while you're having the shower, while you're tending to children, whatever job you have. Nobody knows you're doing it. You're doing it with your eyes open. And you're putting the brakes on that stress response. That's the beginning of physiology changes. You're bringing micro recovery to your body, very short time. If you did that a few times a day, automatically your cells are going to work better. But then you add an emotion to that heart bleeding, with like appreciation, somebody you appreciate, something you appreciate, something you love, something you care about. It's their regenerative feelings like kindness, being grateful, being patient. Immediately, you get physiology changes in your body. You do that often enough. What they're actually saying is you're actually loving yourself, and you're receiving love from other people as well, and you're giving love. And in love, DNA actually curls. And that's what this science, to actually realize that it's love that drives the healing.
Absolutely. And I think the wonderful thing that I'm hearing in the other studies I do into epigenetics is that when we first, at least for me, when I first started hearing about our genetics, it seemed like, too bad you were born that way. Too bad. It's static, not going to change. And with all this lovely research, they're showing that how much more pliable and plasticity, I can hardly ever say that, but how much more changeable it is than originally thought. And I think that gives me a lot of hope instead of this idea, too bad that you came into the world this way and you're leaving that way. It gives me a lot of hope. We need to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we'll talk some more with Ruth Littler about and get into more about her book from titled Live from the Inside Out. So we'll be right back.
The Autoimmune Hour will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by understandingautoimmune.com to learn more.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Hi, it's Olivia Munn with my shelter pets, Frankie and Chance. Say hi, guys. When I adopted them, I discovered that they both have incredible personalities. Chance's sole purpose in life is to love and to be loved. Frankie is a little bit of a scoundrel and always entertaining. They're a little bit of a lot of things, but they're all pure love. Adopt pure love at theshelterpetproject.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, the Humane Society of the United States, and Maddie's Fund.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Sharon, and of course you know me from here on the Autoimmune Hour. Maybe you don't know I'm also an author. My latest book is for kids. It's Pinky Chenille and the Rainbow Hunters, a winner of a 5-star reader's favorite review. It's perfect for your early reader and a great bedtime story for your young adventurers. Check it out over at pinkychenille.com. That's PinkyChenille.com. See you there.
Research shows we apologize up to 10 times a day, and most of the time, we say sorry as a response to someone else's mistake. What if we thanked people instead of all that unnecessary apologizing? So instead of saying, sorry, I'm rambling, you say, thank you for listening. Join us at projectforgive.com, a free non-religious resource on global forgiveness.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And remember to go over to UnderstandingAutoimmune.com to find out all the previous episodes that we have, as well as share this one with your friends and family. And tonight we're here with Ruth Littler, and she's calling all the way from Australia. So she's up bright and early, and I appreciate her doing that. And she is the author of the brand new book, Live from the Inside Out, and it will help you clarify the importance of advocating for yourself and to reclaim your health. And I'm all about advocating for ourselves. So often it's easy when we're not feeling well, and you probably might be not at that moment on top of your game. I remember early in my diagnosis, I wasn't on top of my game for sure. And advocating for myself was tough. Although every time I did it, I'd walk out of maybe the doctor's office. Early on, I had a doctor that his method of communication was gaslighting. I remember the finally when I got up the courage to say my piece, my truth about it, and actually fired the doctor. I remember walking out and having a huge emotional relief of a fist pump and me just going, yes, as I walked out the door. And that was the moment where it was a transformation, Ruth, in me reclaiming whatever. I'm not sure what I reclaimed at that moment other than my voice. And things began to unfold then, of course. And shortly after that, I decided to start the Autoimmune Hour podcast. And I love this idea from the inside out, taking back control. Because one of the early things in my diagnosis was I just felt my body was doing its thing. It was out of control. It's like I couldn't stop it from having the muscle weaknesses and the brain fog and all of that. And so let's talk a little bit about some of the premise of your book, Live from the Inside Out.
As I said to you before, I thought this changing a job would stop the stress. This is over 10 years, right? I just thought if I just change things, take a holiday, have a massage, take vitamins, take these other tips, supplements, it'll all be okay. And it was always like trying to change everything around me rather than what was going on inside. And it's quite a famous statement. It says the outside world actually follows the inner world. I had to actually pull myself up for this because I'm desperate. It was awful. Not just hair falling out, but I actually felt burning in my body. And I knew that I had high inflammation. You know, I was just treated by this doctor, this place, then another doctor, this place, going to a naturopath here. All this costing money. But really, I was just being treated in parts rather than as a whole. And one of the things that when I decided, no, it's got to be something that sees me. But I went to an endocrinologist who said to me, oh, go see your dermatologist for this. But it's not just about the money. It's the time, the waiting time to see the specialist. Then you wait in the clinic. Then you're taking time off work or whatever. And then you just go somewhere else and go somewhere else. And it just takes, depletes me, especially when I felt exhausted. And so I think the thing was to look inside me. What was actually going on? What is the inside world is one of my first questions, because I've researched that and people said, look at your inside world. So it wasn't my words. And the other part about it was I was listening to some, you know, you see quotes on Facebook or something like that. And one of it was, you've got all the, I think it was by Rumi from the Middle Ages. It said, The answer's in you. What you're seeking for is inside you. And I'm thinking, okay, maybe that's what it is. So actually I had to look at inside world, which is your thinking, your emotions, your beliefs, a lot of my experiences as well, and my perceptions of things. And then I realized, as I mentioned to you about the depleting emotions, how they damage health, etc. I started looking at how I could start changing the inside. So beliefs were the big thing, changing what I was thinking. Because I would be honest, I'd start the day thinking I was going to have a bad day.
Oh.
Depending on what day it was, especially when I was at work, the corporate world. And although it depends on who was working with you or what the meeting was about for the day or something. And I think, oh. So automatically, that's what was actually draining me, as well as not really helping me. And I realized that when you have a thought that is depleting to start with, or negative, or not helpful, doesn't serve me, I have an emotion that matches it, and it happens instantaneously. And it's a low emotion. It is a depleting emotion, usually frustration, irritation, dissatisfaction. This is not what I signed up for. I hate what I'm doing, etc. It wasn't like that all the time, but I'm just using an example. And then afterwards, then I have another thought that says, I can't wait till the day's over, my work day's over. And then I'd match that emotion, which is really not joyful. It was really a drag, something that just depleted me again. And that's when I started advocating this for yourself. To me, it means I need to be brave. And I need to do this because this is what life's not about. Life's not about this being a drag or being a burden. And so that's when I started changing that and being aware of my emotion. And then I started reading things that was positive. But what do you go to the doctor say to be treated for diabetes? That's all the treatment is about diabetes. It doesn't give you the treatment And of course, to prevent complications. I realize that. But it doesn't tell you how to feel joyful. It doesn't, they don't tell you that you're living your day in misery, in a quiet desperation. How about changing that? And I've read some really good books on epigenetics, but one of them was by a psychiatrist. And he talked about research being done, or that was done, on monks. And half of them were in a group that actually meditated on a loving God. And another group meditated on a punitive God. The ones that meditated on a God that is punishing and distant and always scowling and watching you and trying to tell you to be better, those monks actually ended up having damage to the front of their brain. And they found that their memory was poor. And also that they were actually not damaged as much. It's just changes in the brain. Everything was slow. Their cognition was poor. Their focus was poor. And then the ones that were meditating on a God of love, they just loved him. They just had their backs all the time. They actually had the ends of the genes, the telomeres, which actually protect the DNA. They were growing. They found huge memory improvements. And they found that they were thinking clearly and they were focused. And I thought, oh, that's what I want. So that was love. So I was meditating on love all the time, not just about receiving love, that in your oneness, connection, God, the divine, but coming back to love. I read in HeartMath that DNA unfurls in love. So all the time for advocating myself was actually looking for love in a different way, only to repair my DNA, nothing else. So that's how I started doing that.
Wow, that's fascinating. And when I think about it, it's one of those things that sounds so simple and yet not always easy. I'm thinking I probably find, at least when I started, always having to bring myself back. I noticed that about my mindfulness practice. Sometimes the monkeys run away with the clowns and off I go. I'm thinking about just knowing the word love brings it to a much more simpler place of as if I keep focusing on just that one word. That's fascinating to me. I love how adaptable our bodies are. It never ceases to amaze me how adaptable not only our physical body, but the mental, emotional, spiritual bodies are. And with the right nourishment, thinking about love, things like that, the right nourishment, not just food, how fast that we can adapt to that. That's fascinating to me. As you began your practices of this, what are some of the things that you noticed about the changes? I'm thinking as if I meditated on love a lot, I imagine I begin to see a lot of changes in my outer world too, as if almost everyone else around me was changing. I don't know.
As you're changing inside the outer world, that's change. Chaos that's around. I didn't feel chaos. And I slept well. That's the first thing that I noticed. And I remember thinking, it's morning. I slept really well all night. I found that I had a lot of pain in my neck and back. Occasionally from posture, I get that. But there was a time when I even had an injection in my lumbar spine. That was about 8 years ago. And I don't have that anymore. I don't have that pain anymore. A little bit of stiffness, but I don't have that pain. They were the things that changed. Another thing that changed was that I let things go instead of holding on. So it's not so meditation. It's just the act of kindness and being grateful all the time. All that actually comes into a higher elevated emotion. And one of the things is that another thing with advocating for myself is I always focused on outcomes, but it was always, what if something goes wrong?
So familiar with that one.
And all the complications that come from chronic illness, at times I would think of the complications. And one day you have a day where you have some difficulty. I think of complications, like if my sugar levels went out, I would think, oh, all these complications, if I don't get this down. And it became a striving thing. But when I realized that I was in the flow and that everything works well, if I just let go. So even like before going tonight, bed at night, what are some of the things I need to let go of? And some of the things that come to me, it's usually resentments, or that I was resentful about something, or that I was just being narrow-minded, being rigid. So I have to let that go. And all that actually changed my outer world. Because yes, I changed my job, but I do self-employed. But at the same time, I'm getting people come to me because of what's changed in me. Your karma, your patience. You're so focused, even though you've got other things to do. And I teach them, I tell them, this is what I do. 1 minute, six times a day, I do a quick coherence technique. I do heart focus breathing. Even 4 years ago, I was at a photocopier. And I'm standing there, copying quite a lot of things. And I was doing my heart focus breathing and smiling as people around me. And people that were impatient, waiting in line, were all smiling back at me. And through the heart's magnetic seal, they're actually feeling my calmness, feeling something different in me. So yes, the inside world is just not about the eating and things like that. It's about changing our thinking and the emotions especially. And it's so easy with techniques. There's so many techniques with heart math. Like, for instance, if I'm saying resentful, but to say that's in my head at the moment, but I feel resentful about something and I think, no, I don't want to feel resentful. You could change your attitude in 60 seconds or even less, but just say, okay, I want to replace this feeling with, example, just kindness or being grateful. So I breathe in gratitude. I breathe out gratitude. Or I could do it the other way. So I breathe in gratitude and I breathe out resentment. This all comes back to a loving way of life. Power of the heart. There's more messages from the heart going to the brain than the brain to the heart. And everything comes back. Once we get this alignment between the heart and the brain, everything works together like those oars hitting the water at the right time, the rumble. And the hormones that are released with every emotional change, there's 1,400 biochemicals that are released. And if we are in the depleting emotions, anger, fear, etc., you're putting out adrenaline and cortisol. But at the same time, you could say, if I change it to gratitude, if I change it to a regenerative feeling that I appreciate somebody while I'm doing my heart-focused breathing, you can release DHEA, the vitality hormone, feel younger. And even oxytocin, which is the love hormone, right?
Releasing resentment and bringing in energy of love and appreciation sounds awesome. I'm really thrilled about what we've learned today. We're just about out of time. So please share with us any final thoughts and then also where we can get your book and learn more about you.
I think the biggest thing to realize is that stopping the stress response is going to reduce your symptoms of pain and inflammation and things like that. The important things to realize, there is research that shows biologically we have these biohacks with everything that we do and that we can actually do reverse some of our illnesses, but also to actually biologically change your age, which is research that is being done. You could see a lot of this on heartmath.org and especially for children. So teachers and children, there are lots of programs for children and even in kindergarten, they can start with a heart-focused breathing. And yes, my book is available online, normal bookstores, but also through my website and through Amazon.
Fantastic. And we'll have that up at understandingautoimmune.com. So if you've missed it here, just go over to understandingautoimmune.com and search for the show. And we'll have all that information about Ruth, her book, Live from the Inside Out, as well as some other great things that we'll have there for you. So thank you, Ruth, for getting up early and being here with us today. This has been so fascinating and hopeful and helpful that you're not stuck. You are not your diagnosis, that there's plenty of things you can do to change what your current state is. Always hopeful, because sometimes I remember back in the early parts of my diagnosis with doctors giving me stats and things like that. They're like, live with it. This is your life from now on and all of that with very little hope. And so I love that, including in your work, there's a lot of hope that you can, and you do have a lot of ability to change your current circumstances. So everyone, have a great week, whatever your adventures. Join me next week for another brand new episode. Enjoy.
The information provided on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune and Life Interrupted Radio, including the websites understandingautoimmune.com and lifeinterruptedradio.com, plus social media, is for educational purposes only. What you read, hear, and see on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune and Life Interrupted Radio, and its websites and other media outlets is based on experience only. The information should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes.
For the next few minutes, we'll be providing a guided meditation. Meditation is a positive way to help reset your day and does require specific, targeted attention and focus. Please do not drive or operate machinery during this time. As we say here, drive when you drive and meditate when you meditate.
Take a moment now. Take a nice deep breath. And extend the exhale with a sigh. That's right. Just let it all go out on the exhale, relaxing every nook and cranny of your body, finding a nice, comfortable spot. That's right. Take a moment now and go to your favorite spot, your favorite place. You know the place. Take a look around and savor the colors, the smells, the textures and patterns as you continue to relax and just let it all go in your nice, safe spot. That's right. On this next exhale, continuing to relax. Begin to let your mind wander to just the ones and twos in life. Right now, we won't be doing the tens. Just pick a one or two in life of something you need to let go of. You know what it is. Maybe it's a resentment, a flash of anger, an expectation that didn't happen, and you've been carrying it around like a heavy weight. On this exhale, just let it go. Let it drop. That's right, completely drop. Notice how quick and simple it was. Gravity takes over when we drop things, so just let it drop. We don't have to do anything but let go. That's right. Notice how much lighter you feel from this place. Are there any other thoughts that wandered through that need to let go? Take the next few moments now to let them all drop. That's right, you just need to let go. Taking a nice deep inhale, feeling your lungs expand and noticing the lightness and the newfound space from everything that's now dissipated and dropped away from you and gone. That's right. On the next inhale, fill those spots with joy and happiness, discovery, imagination, and curiosity. What a delightful feeling fill those spots with joy and happiness, curiosity, discovery, and imagination. That's right. Knowing that you can come back to this spot filled with joy, play, imagination, curiosity, comfort, and joy at any time. That's right. At any time. Taking right now just to set a little roadmap marker to know exactly how to get back here at a moment's notice. That's right. Taking all the time you need right now to savor this joy and happiness as you begin to come back to the present moment, bringing back the joy, the discovery, the creativity, the imagination, happiness, safety and comfort that you found there on letting go. That's right. Coming back to the present moment, eyes wide open, alert and awake and aware. Welcome back.